Welcome to soulinterviews.com,
the home of soul interviews.
So I'm walking through the desert, and I'm not scared, although it's so hot. I have everything that I've requested, and I do not want what I have not got. I have learned so many things from my mother. Oh, see how happy she made me. I will take this road so much farther, though I know not where it takes me. I have water for my journey. I have bread and I've got my wine. No longer will I be hungry for the bread of life is mine. So I'm walking through this desert, and I'm not scared, although it's so hot. I have everything that I've ever requested, and I do not want what I have not got.
Meet the ever irresistible and lovely Miss Betty Lavette here on soulinterviews.com today. A conversation filled with courage, hope, positivity, and laughs.
Well, we're going to have to change your name. It's like I tell them over here, if they aren't acting black enough, I'll have to tell the NAACP about you.
Betty Lavette, one of our most underrated vocalists in rhythm and blues, haunted by bad timing and misunderstandings in the industry.
Nate McCallum shows up missing. Nobody knows what happened. Years later, I found out they found him somewhere in a ditch in Oklahoma.
But also with a huge wish not to fall down into bitterness. A bittersweet voice and a big hope for Atlantic Records and producer Jerry Wexler during the mid-60s. Hear the amazing story about Betty Lavette and hear music from her brand new release, Worthy, out on Cherry Red Records. But let's start in the early 40s in Muskegon, Michigan, where Betty Lavette's parents sold corn liquor in the living room with a jukebox playing Bobby Blue Bland, Dinah Washington, and many more. I am DJ Soul Suede for soulinterviews.com.
I was 18 months old. All 18-month-old children are happy. My childhood was spent in the music business. I really didn't have a high school time. My childhood was happy because that's what it was, childhood. Mm. But my people always drank, so of course they were always happy.
they drank maybe too much sometimes as well.
Well, they never missed a day of work. I never saw either one of them naked, and I never heard anyone cuss but my mother, so I don't know, it wasn't so bad.
The jukebox, what was that common back then to own a jukebox? That sounds a little bit different.
Most places where they sold corn liquor had music of some kind, and that you could get a jukebox if you sold beer and alcohol. And, you know, there was a thing called segregation. Mm. So they had nowhere else to go but my house.
You released your first music here in the early 60s. How did you get into the first record deal?
Don't you bother. In 1962 in Detroit, there wasn't, you could go to high school, you could be a hoodlum, or you could sing.
Right, right.
And I didn't want to go to high school, and I've never been able to fight, and I've always been afraid of guns. So singing was the third option. But no, seriously, it wasn't difficult to do in 1962 in Detroit. That wasn't, getting into show business was not a difficult thing to do. Maybe if you had no talent, it was. But when they heard me, they liked me, and it was so available. There were so many people who were producing, or, well, they weren't called producers. Then they were just people who made records.
But you never went to Motown and Berry Gordy. Was that not your cup of tea at all, or it just didn't happen?
In 1962, it wasn't a full cup of tea. Atlantic was. So I went to the company that Berry Gordy wishes he had been with in 1962.
Don't promise me nothing if you can't stick to your word.
And a young Betty LaVette released You'll Never Change, a 7-inch single on Atlantic Records. There still wasn't something called the Motown sound, and LaVette never had a wish to switch from Atlantic to Motown.
I didn't think anything about it, and we didn't consider it the Motown sound. There really was, it was much more narrow. I think everybody that got into it later broadened it out and started pigeonholing really deeply, but that wasn't the Motown sound. It was just some black people in Detroit making some records. There was an Atlantic sound, and there was a California sound, but there was no Memphis sound or Motown sound or Stax sound. They were just little companies making records. And most of the people at Motown, other than the Supremes, sounded just like everybody did at every other company.
So it didn't sound...
Marv Johnson and Smokey and the Supremes. But Marv Johnson and Marvin Gaye and David Ruffin and all those people sounded just like everybody else sounded. They just happened to be with Motown. And I happened to be lucky enough to be with Atlantic. It was luck at the time. To be with Motown was no big deal.
When I read your bio, it's very, very good, by the way. It's very detailed.
Thank you.
It appears to me that you have been You needed to be a very, very strong woman.
But I needed to do what?
You needed to be a very strong woman to be able to survive all these years in the industry, because you haven't got anything for free.
But no, all the things that have happened have made me strong. I wasn't a strong woman at first. I wasn't even a woman at first.
but not every woman would be able to keep going all these years.
Well, no, maybe not every woman would. Some women would. I don't think I'm the only one woman that would. I'm sure there's some other women who would.
Do you know what gave you this fighting spirit? Because you went from different labels. You were unlucky on your first album release, but you kept going.
It hasn't. The thing that makes me keep going is that something else. When one thing is going bad, I don't deny all things. I just deny that thing that's going bad. But people have always treated me well. I've never had to sleep in the streets or in a car. Everything else has always gone well but my career. I was healthy, I was cute. Men have always liked me. Whole families have liked me and offered to take care of me. So if everything had been going bad, I don't know that I would have been able to hold on. But I was able to dress up cute, go to all the places I wanted to. My career just wouldn't work. So all of my contemporaries and my friends, I felt bad when I would see them because I wasn't doing as well as they were doing. And I couldn't be where they were. I really couldn't hang with them because they were all bigger than me. But other than that, I mean, I haven't suffered, you know, there are some people who actually have suffered out here. Some people who've been strung out on drugs or homeless or were with some man who was beating them all the time. If you looked in if you read the book, you saw that one guy hit me on that first page, but you didn't see any more. You know, I really have been treated very well. Of course, because this is what I wanted to do and because I was constantly pursuing it, I was discouraged and downhearted, and I blamed it on the fact that I wasn't good enough. Before you blame it on anything else, you blame it on the fact that you aren't good enough, which makes you feel worse. So I've certainly felt bad, and I've certainly cried many, many nights. But I haven't been treated badly by anything but this business. And that just happens to be what I wanted.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful to hear.
It's absolutely wonderful. You know, when we talk about, I won the one W.C. Handy Award, but we talk about if I won a Grammy, I would go and I would say, I have many people I have to thank. Unfortunately, none of you are any of them.
I was looking for my joy. Baby, in the Motor City, I find joy. Baby, in the Motor City, I find joy. Then I went to New York, I was looking for my joy. Went to New York and I was looking for my joy. Baby, in the Apple, I could find joy. Baby, in the Apple, I could find joy. My joy. Tell ya, I went down to
went down to Memphis, I was looking for my joy. Maybe in Memphis I'd find joy. Maybe in Memphis I'd find joy. So then I went to Muscle Shoals, looking for my joy. Went to Muscle Shoals, looking for my joy. I thought maybe in the shoals I could find some joy. Maybe in the shoals I could find some joy. No more, cause they took my joy. They took my joy, I want it back. They took my joy, I want it back. Joy, 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 joy. Oh, my joy.
From Betty LaVette's critically acclaimed album and one of 2005's most overseen albums, I've Got My Own Hell to Raise. This was The Funky and Bluesy Joy, an album released more than 40 years after her debut single.
Yes, I have, and most of my help has come from friends. It has come from friends who've been able to maintain and survive in this business. But if the business itself has not embraced me the way they embraced some of the old background singers and some of the old blues singers, and the business has never embraced me that way, but individuals always have. And because those individuals over a 50-year period have gotten to become more substantial in the business, they've been able to help me.
You're truly an amazing woman. And I really mean it.
Oh.
I really mean it from the bottom of my heart.
I thank you. I know too. Well, you know, as I said, it took me a long time to know what I have and to respect it and to know that I should take care of it. Singing is purely a gift, you know. You can learn to play anything. You can learn to dance. You can learn to play any kind of sport. But you cannot be taught to sing. You can only be taught to sing correctly. Or you can be taught to sing better. And over the years, I've been taught to sing correctly, and I've been taught to sing better. Had I become a star, I probably would never have even learned all the things that I've had the opportunity to learn. God knows I wouldn't know how to tap dance.
Yeah, you have even tap danced on Broadway.
Right. I had to do whatever the gig called for, I had to do, because when they called for me, they didn't call for Betty LaVette. They called for a female singer. So I had to do whatever the female singer was supposed to do, which made me broader and broader and broader. Mm. I had to learn to sing softly. I had to learn to sing jazz. I had to learn to sing rock. I had to learn to do whatever the gig called for. And that was what Jim Lewis taught me to do. He said, you may never be a star, but if you want to make your money as an entertainer, you can do that.
Your eclectic taste in music, was that a way for you to survive, or it's just the way you are?
No, I don't think of songs in genres. I just hear songs and I like them, and if I like them, I sing them. I don't care who sung them before or what kind of song it is. If I like it, I know that as soon as I sing it, it'll be a Betty LaVette song. So that'll negate all that other stuff. But on that jukebox in my house, my father loved blues. So, and I was 18 months old, but I could talk really good and I could sing. And I knew all the blues songs, and my father loved gospel. I knew all the gospel songs. My mother loved gospel. I knew her gospel songs. She loved country western. So I knew songs by Minnie Pearl and Red Foley. And then there was my sister, who was 13 years older than me, and she liked the music of the day. And that was on there as well. And I knew all of the songs, all how many ever it was, 50 or 70, how many ever it was. I knew all of them from beginning to end. And I thought of them as songs. And there were some I liked better than others, but I didn't think of them as blues songs or anything. I just thought of them as songs. And I thought of all the people as singers. I didn't know they were different from each other. I just thought they were singers. I had never seen a show. There was no television. My parents never went anywhere because people were always at our house. So all I had was the jukebox, and I thought all those people were just singers. I knew they all sounded different, but they were just singers. I didn't think categorically.
Is that why you have in opposite to many artists, you have preferred interpretations of other songs? Because if you hear a song, you wanted to do it your way.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've never thought of it that way. I just have always sung songs that I like, no matter what kind of songs they were. My manager was very surprised at how many standard tunes I knew, and my husband, I believe, was very surprised at how many different kinds of tunes I knew. But it's just because of my liking the songs, period, just the songs.
So it wasn't lack of confidence in your own skills in songwriting?
Oh, no. I there isn't any lack of confidence at all. I mean, can I play with the NBA All-Star? Because I'm not tall enough, and because I can't play basketball. I wish everybody would get over the fact that they can write and produce and play instruments. But no, I had a lack of confidence in just being able to sing, and that was because all of my friends were doing so much better than me. So I figured, well, gosh, if everybody's doing so much better than me, I must not be that good. And then I met Jim Lewis, and he told me what you are is extremely different. And he said, one half of them may probably are very frightened of you. And I said, for what? And he said, because you're really that different. And I see, I'm so different until I can't sell any records at all.
Have you felt sometimes...
But it took many years for me to get over that.
Have you felt sometimes that you when you looked upon the music industry, that you came from another planet almost? You couldn't relate?
Oh, no, I feel that way now. No, this music business here now is from another planet. And no, I cannot relate. No, this is, I think that I'm still not necessarily being accepted by what we call the quote-unquote industry, but I am being accepted by a broader range of people, and there's so many of them in so many different places now, until I'm peeping up. I'm kind of like that game, Rock-a-mole or something. When you knock the thing down, it keeps popping back up. So I'm kind of like that now. Hi, this is Betty Levette, and you're listening to Soulie on soulinterviews.com.
I can't do it, I can't conceive. You're everything you're trying to make me believe. 'Cause your show is too well designed, too well to be held with only me. Tell me how am I different? How am I different? How am I different? Oh, I can't do it, so move along. Do you really wanna wait until I prove wrong? No, don't tell me, gotta let me guess. I could change it all around if I would just say
before I pack. When you fuck it up later, really ask me to. Cause what do you care about the great divide as long as you can come down on the wooing inside? Tell me
sample from her masterpiece I've Got My Own Hell to Raise from 2005. How am I different? Bella Vett is known for her unique interpretations of other artists' songs, and La Vette see no difficulty in expressing what's coming from another person's pen.
Ain't no sunshine when he's gone. It's not warm when he's away. Ain't no sunshine when he's gone. He's always gone too long. Anytime he goes.
No, it's just a song. It was just words on a piece of paper at one time.
I wonder this time.
Nobody has any qualms with singing the national anthem or reciting Emerson's poems. It's the same thing. those aren't those people's records. But those aren't those people's songs. After they let them go, they're songs that are in the world. They're just songs written by those people. But they don't belong to them. The records belong to them. And I don't like the records, usually. So that's why I just go for the song.
So you see no difficulty to deliver your own interpretation of the song, your own feelings or expressions of it?
No, I find it extremely difficult to sound like Paul McCartney and feel just like him.
That's a good point. Your journey took you down to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, here in the early 70s. How was that?
Well, it's so funny how big it became. You know, it was growing then, but it still hadn't gotten as big as it was destined to get. And I wanted to be there because, you know, I knew that they were recording the kind of music I sing, and it was being very successful, so that was why I wanted to be there. But I really prefer, I'm kind of bougie. I don't wear a lot of blue jeans, and I don't go barefoot at all, and I really am a rhythm and blues singer. Be surrounded by rhythm and blues. You know, I want the things around me to be different so they'll be interesting to me. If everything looks and sounds exactly like me, then it's not interesting to me.
But things didn't turn out exactly the way you wanted there. Tell us about that.
Oh, well, they just didn't release it.
And without any explanations?
Without an explanation. I have just now, in recent years, you know, just with everybody being old and anxious to talk when you see them, it just seems that it was simply a matter of Jerry Wexler and Ahmet Erdogan dividing amongst themselves, and Jerry wanting to be more rhythm and blues, and Ahmet wanting to be more rock, and Jerry just being kind of tired of an opportunity to retire. And that kind of left me with no champion.
So it was all about bad timing, maybe?
Yes. That's why we have the chapter that's called Buzzard Luck, because I've had so much. There has been so much bad timing, because, and especially when people hear me talk and see that I'm a woman of many words, people want to try to liken what happened to me to a whole gang of things they've heard about other artists. But mine has really, most of the things that got other artists in trouble, I never got big enough to do. I never got big enough to feel comfortable coming late or not showing up or showing up drunk. They never let me get big enough to do that. So mine has really been more buzzer's luck than anything. It's, you know, my first manager being shot and completely incapacitated for the rest of his life after I'd only been singing like a month or so. You know, when I did Let Me Down Easy with Calla Records, Nate McCalla shows up missing. Nobody knows what happened. Years later, I found out they found him somewhere in a ditch in Oklahoma. In New York is where he was missing from. And it just a whole gang of things happened. I signed with Columbia right in the middle of when black radio started to fall apart, when they fired all the black promotion men at Columbia, including mine, got rid of Epic Records. I was at the wrong place at the wrong time a million times.
I know that, and that's why I asked you, you know.
But you know, when somebody has that kind of good luck, nobody pays any attention to it. And I've had that very same kind of good luck in the last 10 years. It's been really weird, bizarre, odd thing. But nobody is tracking that with shock. But me, I'm shocked. That other stuff has happened and it's over. I'm shocked at this stuff.
It sounds to me like you have lived your life to the fullest. Is that a good way to describe it?
Oh, absolutely. I've acted out all of my fantasies. I've done this business. It's given me an education that I did not start out with, as it did all of us who started in 1962, 61 and 62. I've been all over the world. I'm now known by someone all over the world, which I never thought would happen. And there's a possibility that if I can live another 10 years, they may let me make some money eventually. So, and I never thought that would happen. I've sung for two presidents, and I mean, I've pretty much sung everything. I've sung at my will at the last 10 years. I've sung pretty much exactly what I wanted to sing. And I pretty much am cool. I pretty much am cool. I have no desire at this point to have this huge thing happen to me that would completely consume all the rest of my little time.
It's unbelievable, strange, but it's true. Inconceivable, it could happen to you. You got some going north and some going south. It's just like the bait in a fish's mouth. You must be living in the shadow of some kind of evil star. Unbelievable, it could get this far. Undeniable, what they'd have you to think. Indescribable, it could drive you to drink. First they said it was a land of milk and honey. Now they turn around and tell me it's all about money. Whoever thought they could make this stuff stick? It's unbelievable you could get so rich so quick. Every head so dignified, every moon so sanctified, every urge is satisfied as long as you're with me. All the silver, all the gold, all the sweet young things your hands can hold. Don't come back with stories untold, hanging on a tree. Every lady in the land had told him lies. He stood beneath the silver skies and just let his heart bleed. Every brain is silver lies. Every nerve is analyzed. Everything is criticized. Whenever you're in need, it's all
trouble, like I live alone. So impossible, you could even learn this tune. You gotta kill that beast and feed that swine, scale that wall and smoke that vine, feed that horse and saddle up that drum. It's unbelievable this day would even come. Unbelievable it would only happen to some.
Betty Levette's new album is entitled Worthy and contains interpretations from legendary songwriters such as John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, and as on Unbelievable, Mr. Bob Dylan. It took her almost 20 years to release her first solo album in the music industry. It came out in 1982 on Motown. And the timing was, as always, not optional.
Yes, that was the first one, and it was just like it was now.
Yeah. It wasn't maybe the most the best commercial period for Motown either.
Lee Young Sr. signed me, loved me. I wasn't that thrilled with the album, but he told me, don't worry about it. Let's just let everybody know you still exist. And we'll get closer with you on the next one and get you the album that you want. He was fired right after that.
The story continues.
Yes. the woman that they hired, who had been Berry Gordy's ex-wife, of course, she knew everybody else there when they were kids, when it started. And she wanted to bring Motown to its former glory. She wanted to bring Motown back to its former glory. So she wanted to work on a new Stevie Wonder album. She was going another direction. Lee Young was trying to get some more senior artists to replace Diane and to replace David Ruffin. You know, so it was two different schools of thought once again, and I was on the other end.
Where do you get all this energy, Miss Lavette? I mean, both physically and spiritually, to keep making those records over the years. You are very hard working, still very hard working.
Well, I guess I'm able to use the energy because I'm reasonably healthy. But I've always talked very fast and moved very fast, and I guess I'm the same kind of old person as I was when I was a young person. I haven't changed my attitude. But I've always had an awful lot of energy, and I've always used a lot of energy on stage. I don't use as much as I used to. I don't even sweat on stage anymore. But, you know, I've applied my energy. I've redistributed my energy. I work smarter now instead of harder.
One of your most successful, maybe, collaborations is the one with Joe Henry. I'm thinking of I've Got My Own Hell to Raise. Tell us a little bit about that. That's a very special release from you, I think, and it was very critically acclaimed as well.
Well, it was something that the record company wanted done. Joe and I weren't very excited about it, but it turned out really well.
Why weren't you that?
Because neither one of us liked themes.
Okay.
All women, all young, all guitars, all, we, you know.
It wasn't maybe...
We didn't want to do that with the first album. We wanted to really kind of explore around and see what we wanted to do. But that was what they wanted to do, and we did it. And as I said, it came out well, so...
You consider yourself a free spirit. Has that been important for you over the years to be a free kind of spirit, not changed in anything, any stereotypes?
No, not really. Because of the songs I've chosen over the years, they've let people see how many ways I could go. But just in terms of doing exactly what I want to do, that's only happened in the last 10 years.
Let's talk about the new album. We also have to mention that, of course, in 2009, you had the honor of performing A Change Is Gonna Come together with John Bon Jovi for President Barack Obama. How was that?
Well, that was possibly the biggest thing that's ever happened to me. And it was, I was glad that it was a song that I could sing while asleep. Because it was, you know, it was a stunning moment. And I would have otherwise, had it been a new song or something, I probably would have been nervous. But I was, all of this is making me more relieved than really nervous, because I've wanted these things to happen so long. So when they happen, I'm not just so overjoyed or gleeful. I'm more relieved at this point. You know, I'm almost 70, don't you?
Wow.
Yeah, so overjoyed is probably not going to happen again. But I can constantly, it constantly makes me more comfortable, more accepted, and more relieved. And that was, I was standing at the feet of Abraham Lincoln looking at the first black president, who incidentally is the same age as my career.
Right. Were you able to talk to Mr. Obama as well?
That was, you know, and 800 million people saw me. And that was who I've been wanting to see me for the last 50 years. All 800 million of them.
Were you able to talk to Mr. Obama as well?
Just briefly. We all had the opportunity to speak with him just briefly, and the whole family. You know, they came by in a line after we did the show and spoke with all of us who were on the show. Then they took all of us who were on the show into a private area, and we were able to, you know, just speak briefly. There were no long conversations.
Was it on request from the president that you were there, or who picked the artists?
No, the people who had done the Kennedy Center honors, which I had done just a few weeks before.
Okay.
That had worked so well. They thought that this would work well, and it did.
It took a mighty blow to crack me all the way to the core. Finally come to know that I could ask for more. I've wandered all my life trying to find a home. Trying to survive, how could I have known left you stumbling in the dark? So I had to go within. I traced every one of my scars back to where I'd been. A diamond in the dirt, so totally concealed. Way down beneath the hurt, it was so hard for me to feel that I was worthy, worthy. What a fine acclaim. The only life I knew,
finally,
well, for me anyway.
Yeah. Finally, Miss Lavette, let's talk about the new album Worthy, another collaboration with Joe Henry. More interpretations.
That's what I am, pretty much. I'm a song stylist. I've been going with the words that everyone... I'm using the words everyone else is using other than the word cover, because cover is something you do with the records, not with songs.
Yeah, and cover to me is more like a copy, an interpretation.
Yeah, that's what a cover is.
Mm.
But when they used to put songs out on sheet music before records, everybody just sung them. Nobody covered them. Some people sold more of them than other people. I mean, in terms of their live performances. You know, some people drew more people than other people, but they all were just singers.
Can you pick one of your favorite songs on the new album?
Not from this one. I like every single one of them. And on stage, I'm doing a whole album from top to bottom.
You talk
the
like
only time this has ever happened to me in my life.
You love them all.
I like every single one of them. They were done exactly the way I wanted them done. And Joseph, who immediately, when we met, understood me. But now that he's older, and now I've learned more what I want to say, he could understand me quickly and tell the musicians what I meant, because I speak in musical gibberish. But somehow he understands what I'm saying.
What's in the pipeline for you this year, Miss Lavette? What's your plans?
Well, we're working. I mean, you know, just we're on the promotion tour right now, and that'll be until the end of May. And then we'll be formally working, but it'll still be introducing the CD. It's just that we are in actual promotion mode right now. But that's what the year will be about, introducing the CD. And the book has been optioned for a movie, and we'll be working on that screenplay.
Wow, that's good news. Any plans to come over to Europe?
Yes, I'll be there Sunday.
When you and your husband come over, you can stay on my couch in my living room.
No,
if you like.
We aren't. No, he doesn't do that. We aren't doing this for fun. It isn't like we're taking a trip to somewhere. No, I'm working, and you don't take your wife or your mate to work with you, unless you are Mick Jagger, and then you can have somebody to watch. They were telling me Madonna takes all of her children, but she has somebody to watch each one of them.
Right.
So the only way my husband could come is if we could bring all our kitty cats, and we'd have to have somebody to watch each one of them.
Do you have an
achievement? But you do know I'm coming over there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's why I actually interview you as well. You're coming over to the UK, I think.
I'm coming to Malmo, Sweden.
Wow, that I didn't know.
And I'm
know.
Coming to Bern, Switzerland, and I'm coming to Brussels and Amsterdam and London, and...
You know, Malmo...
I'm on a real world tour.
Wow, because Malmo, that's very close to where I stay.
We just finished the East Coast, the West Coast, and Canada.
I really have to come to Malmo to see you, because I live very
well,
close
to
Malmo.
Well, you have to keep up as well, Soli.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to change your name. It's like I tell them over here, if they aren't acting black enough, I say, I'll have to tell the NAACP about you. So, if you can't keep up, you're going to have to change your name to just kind of Soli or something.
Yeah, I will behave better in the future. I promise you that. You have my word on that. No, oh, you're wonderful. It was a true honor talking to you, and a true pleasure. And once again, apologies for the misunderstanding with the time here.
I thank you for taking your time too, and for wanting to talk about me and write about me. You know, that helps me. Everybody that hears you, then I don't have to try to get over to their house personally. So,
I come see you in Malmo. You don't have to stay on my couch.
Please introduce yourself to me. Please do so. If you get back in touch with the record company or with the publicist or whomever, you know, and let them know that you want to be on the backstage list.
Soulinterviews.com, taking it deeper. Thank you.
amount of money. Ever take away the pain the trouble and the heartbreak of loving you, and it hurts so much to have to say this. So many times I wanted to. Now this here is something I just gotta say to you. I lied so many times, so many times for you. It ain't even funny. I've done a lot of crazy things. I tried so hard to make you happy, but I just couldn't get through to you at all. So baby, just between you and me and the wall, you're a fool. Too bad, baby. It's too bad, 'cause you were the one. I said I'd treat you nice, baby, and I did for such a long, long time. But too many surprises, too many sleepless nights, too much confusion in my mind about what I'm getting, what I'm getting out of this life. I lied so many times. For you, it ain't even funny. I tell you, I've done a lot of crazy, crazy, crazy things. I tried so hard to make you happy, but I just couldn't get through to you at all. Baby, between you and me and the wall, you are a fool. Funny, I've done
get through to you at all. So baby doll, between you and me and the wall, you're a fool. You're a fool. You're a fool. You're a fool, babe. You're a fool, babe. You're a fool.
SoulInterviews.com,
the home of Soul Interviews.